This program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Martha Potter from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State Magazine. Today's reading of Our State Magazine is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting this podcast for over 15 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. Happy New Year! The January issue of Our State Magazine features articles all about our cozy season. Whether we're curled up with a book, tucked into a bakery, or surrounded by steaming cups of coffee and the strumming of guitars, we savor staying put. First up is the welcome message entitled Memory Lane by the editor, Elizabeth Hudson. "Let's take a drive," I said to my mom, and off we went, winding out of Greensboro and past Winston-Salem to pick up that long stretch of U.S. Highway 52 toward Mount Airy. I didn't tell her where we were going. I'd planned the day as a surprise. First, lunch at the Dairy Center, then to Wally's service station for a Mayberry squad car tour. But when the knob at Pilot Mountain State Park came into view, she leaned forward, eyes bright, and asked, "Are we going to Mount Pilot?" She caught herself, and we both laughed. Mount Pilot isn't a real place, of course, except in the way television made it so, fixed forever into the geography of North Carolina by the Andy Griffith Show, which, thanks to syndication, has never been off the air since its debut in 1960. My mother was 10 then. She watched Perry Mason and Gunsmoke, but those places, the courtrooms of Los Angeles and the plains of Dodge City, were far from her corner of southeastern Guilford County. Then came a show that looked as if it could have been filmed right down the road. It looked just like home. After our lunch, Mike Cockerham was waiting at Wally's, leaning against the fender of one of his 1960 Ford Galaxies, as if time itself had slowed just for us. He swung open the back door, hinge creaking as my mother eased into the bench seat. I saw the years fall away. She told a story of her first car, a 1953 Mercury her father bought for $100. Straight gear. He taught her to work the clutch on a dirt road in his 1937 Dodge truck. She stalled it again and again until the day she didn't. After that, she went everywhere in that Mercury, ball games on Friday nights, beach trips with the windows down. 30 cents bought a gallon of gas back then. A dollar took her anywhere. Later, after saving her waitress tips, she bought a used Ford Falcon for $500, and that was the car she had when she met my dad. He loved cars, too, and showed up for their first date in a 1968 Buick Skylark, powder blue. They drove country roads with no traffic, went to dinner at Cellar Anton's in Greensboro, and one afternoon, without ceremony, they drove that car to the courthouse and got married. I never knew the Skylark. In the 1970s, during the gas crunch, they traded it for a VW Beetle. In the 80s came my dad's red pickup, nearly 300,000 miles on it before he finally let it go, and my mother's Chrysler sedan, the car in which I took my driving test. Years later, they bought matching Subarus, hers in satin white and his in sandstone. Two cars parked side by side in the driveway, and they stayed like that for a long time. Last Christmas, on a cold winter night, my mom and I rode together in the Asheboro Christmas Parade. I was the Grand Marshal, technically, but she was the one people recognized, she and my dad having built a life in this town. The temperature dropped to 29 degrees. We huddled together in a 1958 Chevy Corvette convertible, powder blue, how about that, and waved to the lines of people up and down Sunset Avenue and Fayetteville Street. Lights flickered off the chrome. As we inched along the block where her store once stood, down the streets where my dad hauled lumber for the sign, and where they ate sandwiches together on slow days, Time replayed itself. Old stories rolling forward and backward. Her memories and mine running on repeat. And now I will take you on a descriptive journey through this month's photo essay entitled Winter at Rest. Snow in North Carolina may be fleeting, but when it falls, the state settles into a peaceful pause. The caption for the first photo is, On Roan Mountain, ridges toss and turn between blankets of clouds and snow. And the photo is, in the foreground, is winter grasses caked in ice or snow, and snow on the ground, and then a stand of fir trees. And in the distance, you see where the clouds, you see a bank of clouds hovering over the mountains. Under the covers, Roan Mountain. When snow wraps the Appalachians, most folks stay put, leaving the trails untouched. But those who venture up to any of Roan Mountain's five summits will find the Blue Ridge slumbering under frosted layers of clouds and ice, sun and snow. Starting at Carver's Gap, experienced hikers with the proper gear can trek part of the Appalachian Trail to the summit of Roan Mountain's grassy ridge bald. And again, in this photo, we have snow-covered ground along with different grasses coming up through the snow. And each frond is coated in ice and snow. And there's a lone hiker following a trail. Not as many clouds in this photo, but still you see the Blue Ridge Mountains in the distance, and the blues and whites, and even some pale, pale greens reflected in the photo. Cradled in stillness, Dry Falls, Nantahala National Forest. As temperatures drop, the water once cascading over the 75-foot Dry Falls hangs suspended in time. The torrent seems to freeze in midair, transforming into a crystalline bed of spires and spikes that glitter against the rock face. Though the stairs and famous walkway behind Dry Falls are best left to the ice, visitors can still glimpse this frozen spectacle from our state's waterfall byway along part of U.S. Highway 64. And in this photograph, you see the falls and the frozen, there's still a little bit of water coming over, it appears, but most of it is frozen into stalactites, icy spires and little icicles and such. And then the water below, along the edge, you can see along the rock face that's just covered in ice. And there's a golden light coming through the trees, which lights up the back of the background and turns it into sort of a golden color. Patchwork Paws, Newland. It's as if barn quilts were made for snowy days. When the high country's farms turn white, the land seems to sleep. But then, oh, the bright squares shout against the undyed landscape, pops of color in an otherwise hushed, whitewashed world. Even the cows appear stitched into the scene, part of the pattern that invites passersby to pause. Western North Carolina has one of the nation's largest concentrations of barn quilt folk art. These at a private farm in Newland invite travelers along U.S. Highway 221 to admire the view. And the photo here is of a brown barn with some cows, looks like woolly Scottish cows possibly, in the foreground. They're longhorns and woolly fur. And you see a barn quilt square positioned over the top, above the hayloft, if you will. And it's in shades of pale green along with purple and some yellow or off-white, maybe ivory, and a little bit of a pink or red center and a little bit of light blue. It's several different colors there in a nice pattern. And in a barn in the background, a red barn, this one is sporting another quilt square that has blue with fringed in yellow on the outside. And then the inside has two colors of pink, both a dark pink and a lighter color pink and some sort of little center area. I can't really tell what the color is of that. And the landscape is white with snow, and the trees are covered in snow as well, with a blue sky, a little bit of clouds, and but a nice view. Next is Whispers of Play. This is at Beach Mountain. Winter usually signals rest, but ski resort towns can't stay still in such weather. Riders bundled in neon jackets, scarves, and mittens streak down packed tubing lanes, sending powder and laughter flying into the quiet woods beyond. After a day at Beach Mountain Resort, Fred's General Mercantile offers a roaring wood stove, hot meals, and anything else snow bunnies need to warm up. And in the picture, you have a couple of kids in the tubing lanes, tubing down the mountain, and one holding on for dear life and the other one with her hands spread out, being a daredevil. And, of course, everything is covered in snow. And we have a picture of Fred's General Mercantile. It's kind of a teal blue color in the midst of a white background with everything, every frond of every tree, every branch of every tree, either coated in ice or snow. It appears to be some ice. Next is Hunkered Haven, Mast Farm Inn in Valley Crucis. Nothing compares to waking to snow that snuck in while you slept. It's all the more dreamy in a warm early 1800s bed and breakfast. Cross the creaky floor and peer through wavy paned glass that has witnessed so many dustings before. Perhaps you'll stay in today. The Mast Farm Inn in Valley Crucis offers 7 rooms in the historic main lodge and also 10 private cottages, including the Loom House, which was built in 1810. And for information on the Mast Farm Inn, check out their website at themastfarminn.com. Themastfarminn.com. And the Loom House, built in 1810, is actually a rough-hewn log structure, not rounded logs, but squared-off logs, original logs there. 2 red rocking chairs on the front and staircase going up the side to enter in the top, if you need to go in the top part. And then there's an aerial view of the actual Mast Farm Inn itself. And it appears to be sort of a sage green color popping out from the white of the surrounding areas and lots of outbuildings along the highway. Blanketed Heights, Grandfather Mountain. When snow blows across Grandfather Mountain, the mile-high peak stiffens with a sharp beauty, but just as quickly, drifts pile up on rocky ledges and wind-blown trees, softening the contours of the rugged landscape. Before you go, check the Grandfather Mountain Nature Park and Swinging Bridge website for information on weather-related closures. Their website is grandfather.com. And the photo shows the stone flagship walkway going up to the swinging bridge, the mile-high bridge. Everything, all of the guy wires and everything are coated in ice and snow. And you've got windswept trees. They remind me of trees at the coast where just have all the branches are facing on one side of the tree because of the wind. Next up is Hushed Flurries, University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Oh, the glory of a college snow day when routines turn to romps and young adults ease back into childhood play. Students making their way to the dining hall to stock up on supplies break out in giggly snowball fights. For however long the coverage lasts, the campus breathes easy and studies can wait. Some students frolic in front of Wilson Library and others take peaceful nighttime strolls past the old well. And as an alum of UNC Chapel Hill, I too have participated in a number of snowball fights in the quad of Wilson Library. So we have some folks who are throwing snowballs at each other right in front of Wilson Library. And we have the old well ensconced in some snowy trees. And we have somebody walking past. Silent Shelter, Oregon Inlet life-saving station in Rodanthe. Even as frigid waves roll ashore, the Outer Banks' old life-saving stations stand stoic, as they have since the late 19th century. Windows are sealed like eyes squeezed shut against the gales, while cedar shakes keep the building zipped tight and dry. These stations have weathered this before and more. The Oregon Inlet life-saving station in Rodanthe stands resilient, braving winter like a seasoned sailor. And it's got cedar-shake-sided siding and roof and a wraparound porch. And it's in the middle of the snowstorm, so the view is of kind of shrouded in falling snow. And every the ground is covered in snow, and then you see some of the grasses, the seagrasses, poking through the snow. Tucked Shoreline, Carava Beach. It's not often that sand and snow get to cuddle together, but when they do, the coast seems to sigh. The sun, dipping low on an early evening, pulls covers of pink, purple, and gold over the beach, tucking the shore into a serene truce of fire and frost. The beaches of the Outer Banks, like Carava in Currituck County, exhale deeply in the off-season stillness. And I don't know that I could give a better description than the magazine just did of this beautiful scene where snow-covered beaches, sand, and then the setting sun just is bringing forth deep purples and lavenders and deep peachy pinks and bright pinks coming across the setting sun. And the grasses, the golden hue of the grasses, seagrasses springing up through the snow. All right, jumping on into the January issue, all about coziness, the cozy season. Sure, we could try to fight the frost, but why bother? Instead, we embrace wintertime with warmth. And the photo here is of a crackling fire at Highlander Mountain House in Highlands. And it just looks warm and cozy, leather furniture and this blazing fire. Looks very inviting. This article is entitled, A Long Winter's Nap. During the coldest months of the year, nature hunkers down and cuddles up, and we North Carolinians follow suit. Charles Morton was sure of it. Aristotle was wrong. Morton figured in his 1703 essay, it was the moon that called to the swallows. Where else could the great flocks of swooping, chattering birds hide during the winter? Aristotle had announced that the swallows hibernated in holes like hollow trees, but Morton held firm that they migrated to the moon or dove to the bottoms of lakes and rivers, wrote the Swedish Archbishop Olaus Magnus, to hibernate in the mud. Carl Linnaeus and then Samuel Johnson agreed, the moon or the mud, those were the top contenders. It was there that the swallows hibernated, clad in stardust or muck. Those were the only obvious choices. Scientists, scholars, and poets have long been fascinated by the notion of hibernation, a type of dormancy that animals undergo when the temperatures plummet. They knew that winter is a challenging time for those who can't huddle up to a fireplace hearth. Smaller animals struggle to keep their body temperatures regulated in a deep freeze. Snowy woods make travel a chore when your legs are only half an inch long. And a blanket of white offers little camouflage for a mouse under the watch of a hungry owl. Larger creatures in colder climates like black bears may struggle to find enough food to sustain themselves, so they gorge during late summer and autumn, and then they hunker down. Which sounds kind of nice, yes? For all of us, this is the cozy time, the slowing down time, the time of crackling fires and shearling slippers. We huddle, squinch, spoon, and cuddle. We hibernate under our covers and groan and complain when the alarm bids us arise. If only for an evening or on a cold afternoon, we seek what quizzed the ancients and confounded the scholars. Rest and renewal, a long winter's nap. It's always been a mystery how hibernating creatures pull it off. During hibernation, an animal goes into a sleep as deep as Rip Van Winkle's 20-year power nap. Its heartbeat drops to just 5 or so beats per minute. Metabolism plummets. Body temperatures can cool to just above freezing in some animals. Before hitting the sack, true hibernators pack on a layer of specialized fat called brown fat. Filled with extra heat-producing mitochondria, brown fat is pretty much like a nature's electric blanket. But deep hibernators can be pulled from their dens and remain listless in the early and nearly motionless, like a teenager on a Saturday morning. In relatively balmy North Carolina, only two animals truly hibernate, groundhogs and bats. And they hit the snooze button with a vengeance. A groundhog's body temperature can drop to as low as 37 degrees Fahrenheit, and it might breathe only a few times a minute. Bats crowd into mass hibernation sites called hibernacula, and these are probably not the places you want to take the family. Bears, raccoons, possums, and all other North Carolina mammals that snooze during winter aren't true hibernators, but they enter a period of torpor. Their heartbeat and respiration rates will fall, but not precipitously, and they can wake up more easily. They'll still come out for a snack or two. Reptiles and amphibians experience what biologists call brumation, which, to be honest, doesn't sound like a lot of fun. Terrestrial toads burrow deep into rock cracks or dig below the frost line. Aquatic frogs pretty much just tough it out on the bottoms of ponds and creeks. During the coldest periods, a frog's liver increases its payload of glucose, and the extra sugar in its body acts as antifreeze, preventing the formation of ice crystals that would, sad to say, be the end of them. Wood frogs might be the toughest soldiers in the forest. They can freeze nearly solid. Brain activity and heartbeats can almost cease, but warm up that wood frog's toesies in the sun, and it'll spring back to life. Compared to all that, we humans have it pretty easy. We moan about freezing rain and groan about a cold wind on our cheeks. There's practically a cottage industry that's grown up around forecasting wind chill, like we'd ever ride a bicycle down a wintry January street without clothes on. But it's all better than freezing solid and hoping our cell walls don't rupture. And brown fat sounds absolutely yucky, no matter how warm it might keep a winter critter. So we don't hibernate or brumate. We turn a bit sluggish. We retreat to places of comfort. Like a snoozing garter snake, we seem to lose touch with the outside world, although we will occasionally rise for a drink. This phenomenon of human response to cold weather has a widely accepted scientific name. It's called Sunday afternoon football. Daylight is shortened and sunlight is weakened. This is the lean time and a mean time for many, a time of bare branches and sleet tinkling on the roof. Whether one hibernates, brumates, or simply goes horizontal on the sofa for a bit, it seems that the entire universe suggests we take it easy for a few months. So bring on the heavy coats and thick fleece sofa throws, that old ragged sweatshirt, that favorite one you'd wear every day if your spouse would let you. It's in a drawer somewhere. This is a time for rest and renewal and hot chocolate. If not for a winter, then for a long winter's night. Or for an hour or two until kickoff. The next article is from a regular column, North Carolina Naturally, exploring landscapes and living things in our great outdoors. It's entitled Nature's Architects. From twigs and moss to spider silk and fur, every nest reminds us that beauty and belonging begins close to home. I was reading my toddler a bedtime story called Merry Months of the Year by Patricia Scarry when we came to the winter pages, four lines that would change my life forever. Nature's garden is resting. The trees are stark and bare. Now you can see the lovely nests you didn't know were there. I'd always thought of winter as a time we all agreed to muddle through together. The worst book on the shelf, sandwiched between two stunners. How had I been wrong for so long? Winter's not a time of gloomy barrenness. It's a time for finding. In winter, nature lays its cards on the table, ready for us to see it all. Most birds around here don't live in their nests during the winter. Instead, they fluff feathers, shiver, huddle, and hunker down in cavities. Nests aren't built for warmth or surviving frigid rains. They're built for babies. They're cradles, not homes. Frank Harmon is an architect who structures, grace landscapes in other parts of the world and across our state. Once you see his style, you'll recognize his buildings as soon as you come upon them. The natural light filtering into the iron studio at Penland School of Craft. The deceptive simplicity of the Center for Architecture and Design in downtown Raleigh. The natural goodness of the North Carolina Pottery Center in Seagrove. Frank knows more about dwellings than almost anyone. Maybe that's why finding bird nests thrills him, or maybe it thrills him for the same reason it thrills most of us. A bird nest gives us a peek into someone else's most private life, something meant to be hidden. Whatever the reason, Frank's designed plenty of nests for humans as well. Bird nests are different. Bird nests decay on an accelerated scale, he says. Nothing we build lasts, but a bird's nest goes away more quickly than ours. Bird nests are built from discarded bits found with tiny eyes, carried in beaks or scaly toes, woven or stacked in impossible layers. Each bit, to a bird's mind, becomes something greater than it once was. Earthworm castings become mortar spackled between robin's sturdy twigs. Snake skins become ribbons together with hair and feathers for Carolina wren nurseries. Every piece of this world can be made beautiful, useful, when seen by the right eyes. All year, Frank and I look for birds. In the winter, we await the ruby-crowned kinglets that show up for a few months before heading back north. In the spring, we wait for the curious catbird's return. In the fall, we watch for the masses of red-winged blackbirds that flow from lawns to sky like a dandelion wish come alive. In winter, we find those bird nests in bare trees and bushes, and we marvel at how the ordinary becomes something revelatory. One reason to admire bird nests, Frank says, is that they use things that are local. It makes things more comfortable. Twigs and candy wrappers become cradles for towhees or under the wisteria. Bits of lichen decorate the tiniest teacups for bean-sized hummingbird babies. To see bassinets and lichens clinging to tree branches, to pay attention to the mosses, and to recognize the tufts of raccoon fur blown in the warming winds, to make our most beautiful work privately for the ones we love, tucked away just for them, and to be willing to let it blow away come fall, knowing the best parts get carried in them. We've run out of time for today's episode of Our State Magazine, but we hope you've enjoyed it and that you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Martha Potter, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired and is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long till next time.